Anna McDonald is an occasional guest on this show, a tour de force in the Kafka community. Always great to have a conversation with her. Today, we talk about her course, her Confluent Developer course, on event sourcing. We're not going to go over all the content of the course. You can watch it and take the course for that purpose. But really, she kind of lays some foundational ideas that I think will prepare you to benefit from that course a little bit better. Streaming audio is brought to you by Confluent Developer. That's developer.confluent.io. Anna's course on event sourcing is there, along with a number of other video courses, patterns for event-driven architecture, executable tutorials on basic Kafka concepts, Kafka streams, KSQL DB, all that kind of stuff. The examples, a lot of the labs for the courses and Kafka tutorials take place in Confluent Cloud. So when you sign up for Confluent Cloud, use the discount code PODCAST100 for an extra 100 United States Federal Reserve notes in credit. Should get you through your course or whatever it is you're doing without you having to pay anything other than your time and attention. So with that, be sure to check that stuff out. And now let's get to today's show. Hello and welcome to another episode of Streaming Audio. I am, as usual, your host, Tim Berglund, and I'm joined in the studio by, I don't know, many time repeat returning guest, illustrating the triumph of hope over experience, Anna McDonald.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi.
Hi. Anna's a customer service technical architect.
Close. What's customer success technical architect.
Oh my goodness. Okay. It's it's I still say TAM in my mind, or technical account manager, and probably most people.
I know. Yeah.
But you coined the pronunciation siesta of.
Yes. I don't think I was the first one on my team to notice that. I think it might have been Doug. I don't know who picked that, but it was a money call because
that's kind of on brand for you. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
So Anna is on the show today. And Anna, so just a little peek behind the curtain of how this works in the calendar invite, whether you're a Confluent person or a non-Confluent person, there's a link. We use a service called Zencastr. It's just a link and it's all through the web to record this. And then like a little link of audio and video best practices and this the thing. And a Google Doc for you to like fill out your outline for what you want to talk about. Anna, I don't even know what we're talking about today. Cause
that's totally cool. I think I do.
I like it better. I just want to know, I want you to know, I like it better this way. Like, I don't feel like I really need to be guiding the conversation. I think I'm just here to talk to you.
Yeah. I mean, I would agree. So I think what we're going to talk about is we're going to talk about event sourcing. So I got contacted sometime in the early spring and asked if I would fly out to tape an event sourcing course, an eventing and Kafka course. And I said yes, for many reasons, because it was a worthy endeavor. Also, because I hadn't been anywhere in about 18 months. I was fully vaccinated. So, you know, I wanted to see Sanjana, Anna P, you know, my friends. I hadn't seen them in a long time. And so I was, you know, and the course.
I could add some reasons. You're a super good teacher and your like presence on camera is amazing. So there were all kinds of good reasons for you to do this.
Absolutely. And most importantly, I love eventing. It was how I got started in Kafka was with, you know, event streaming. So it was my first use case, and I am very, very passionate about it. Very passionate about how you should bring it into your space, what orders you should go into in order to make sure you don't crash and burn in a fiery ball of death. And I have a fun analogy about that too.
Okay, we'll get to the fiery ball of death.
Yes.
Analogy. I want to say when it comes to event sourcing, so I'm going to ask you, obviously, to define what that is and kind of walk us through the course. So this will be like the podcast amuse-bouche before the meal that is that course. Maybe it's like a full-on appetizer. It's not just it's like a actual thing that you order.
It's like little mini beef Wellingtons where you could just like eat them all as a meal. I like those.
Yeah. But if it's just the weddings. One that comes there. Yeah. But this is like six of them. You know, for the table.
I eat all of them.
And everybody else is like, I wanted some. And you're like, well, I don't make
too
the rules.
Bad.
Right. Should have got on that. Okay. That's so right. I want to ask you what event sourcing is. And I just want to point out that this is one of those things. Like if you get up on a stage or I don't know, tweet something or write something, whatever, and you say, hey, I want to talk about event-driven architecture, and you use that phrase, okay? Mm-hmm. People want to talk about it. It's interesting. You know, there could be questions and interaction. People, there could be pushback on certain things. You know, it can be a robust dialogue. I want to say, when I say event sourcing, that is the biggest, well, actually trigger that's kind of currently in my world.
Absolutely. It is so gatekeepy. It kind of makes me vomit. Because here's the thing, right? Is event sourcing a specific event pattern? Yes. Yes, it is. Do people mean lots of different things when they say event sourcing erroneously? Yes. Right? But there's no need to be rude about it. Right. So event sourcing is not event driven everything, right? It that's not event streaming. It's not event driven architecture.
It's very,
it's a narrower specific category. I like to refer to it as the grand poobah of eventing. It's like eventing taken to the extreme.
So we may engage some corrective feedback. Who knows? Could happen. But tell us what event sourcing is, and then let's just kind of walk through the course and just talk about
it. Yeah, I mean, I love corrective feedback. Like, bring it. Like, really do.
Yeah.
It'd be great. So yeah, the course starts off with what's the and I like the way that it rolls out, because it starts off with kind of what's the difference between, you know, event-driven, you know, architecture, and also just our normal kind of at-rest architecture. And I think we use like a chess game to describe it. You know, and then we also use like Cartesian coordinates to describe it. There's a couple of like good analogies in there. But what it comes down to, right, it's about whether or not you look at the things, it's how you look at the things in your world, right? Whether that thing is an invoice, whether that thing is a person, like an account holder, right? Things happen to that. A person might update their address, right? You know, these things, an invoice might be paid, an invoice might be credited. So events happen to things. And unless you're using some kind of event streaming and some sort of eventing pattern, you're not doing that. And for the longest time, we didn't do that. We were like, you're a person, you're a thing, you stay in this database, and we're just going to continually just, you know, update the state of this person. Right. So it's like taking a Polaroid. I always like to say that, like, you're on vacation and you're taking a Polaroid. Right. And let's say that in one picture, if it has this happened to anyone where like somebody breaks their arm on vacation. And so like in like the first half of the vacation, they're like, you know, and then in the second half, they're like, you know, or they got a broken leg and crutches and you're like, how the hell? What happened?
Or like
what
a real bad sunburn. And in the second half, they've got like, like defined sunburn lines.
And correct. And like, right. You're missing the
healthy.
Like, you know, something has changed. You have no idea like how. You only know the current state. You're like, I'm not. Wait, how did. And that's to me what I love about events, because they model our real world. It's like, yo, dude broke his arm. Needed to go to the hospital. Like, we're going to tell you that. Right.
So And there are things that happen, and both of those get to be first-class citizens.
Correct.
In
so, yes. And I love that, because people are interested in events. So, like, someone who broke their arm, like, probably a doctor wants to know that. Like, someone's coming in, probably like your Aunt Janice. Mine would, because she would have been like, I told you not to let them climb on those walls, and you did.
Exactly. So, it would have had that sort of corrective feedback.
Yes.
It would have helped you heal.
Absolutely. There are people in real life interested in those events. And then there are a lot of people inside an organization that are interested in those events, right? Those aggregates, like, or domains, as they are called, right? And so I think, you know, the course kind of goes over that in a very strategic fashion, you know, to build a case. And I think one of the things that, and I like the way you say that this is, you know, kind of an appetizer, like the mini taco or beef Wellington, if you will. Two of my favorite things at a wedding. Go there for the appetizers. Like, that's, and of course the love to celebrate, you know, somebody's.
Well, there's also love. Yeah.
Right. I'm sure it's great. But they usually have the tacos and like those little beef Wellingtons. So I like those. So one of the things that we don't
or is
go
it
over.
Beef Wellington.
Oh, that's like the mini pastry. So it's like beef and then there's pastry around it.
Yeah, I know. But you said beef Wellingtons, or I said, is it beef's Wellington? I'm not sure.
Anyway, oh, you're right. I don't know. That's like a good call. I don't know which one it is. Is it? I think it's Beef Wellingtons, right?
Okay. All right.
Because the full official name is Beef Wellington.
Yeah, but that the modifier, the adjective is second, which is not the way we... Anyway,
yeah.
We should have a different podcast episode on that. I'm sorry, I distracted you.
Should. I agree. Yeah. And so one of the things we don't talk about in the course, and I think this is something that people ask me again and again, and I started out in Kafka doing event streaming and talking about event patterns. And mm-hmm. since the first day that I decided to show my face to everybody, people have asked this question. I don't think a week has ever gone by where somebody has not asked me this question. And yet we don't cover it in the course. Okay. And so if this is the appetizer, I'd like to talk about that. Because the course will tell you what it is, how to do it, what to think about. But what it doesn't tell you is, how do I do this in my organization? How do I get started putting event-driven things in my organization? Because, and some people will say, well, it's different for everyone. I'd say, no, it's not. There are clear ways to fail, and I've seen them again and again and again, right? And I'll give you an example. And I thought about it today and I just came up with like an analogy and I was like, yeah, baby, because I think this will kind of be a way to talk about this. So I'm sure everyone listening to this knows what a boil water advisory is. It's like a boil advisory, right? Where like if something bad happens to your water supply, there's like a water boil advisory, right?
There might be pathogens.
Correct.
Because there was a break or a flood or whatever.
Boil your water, right? So let's say that like you're a news station, right? Back in the day. So when there was like a water boil advisory and you're a newspaper, right? Or whatever, right? You'd have to like print that like maybe in the evening edition, right? After people had probably already got Giardia, which is, you know, not very useful.
No.
Right? It's kind of like a look back, you know, like, hey, by the way, yesterday, I know why your stomach's not feeling good today. This is why, right? And then, you know, obviously you're like, crap, I got Giardia, I'm going to go to the doctor, right? So that, I like akin that to like where you're starting with, where it's a batch job. So like 24 hours later, after you run something, you're like, well, crap, this is the stuff that didn't process, or this was, right? It's almost like looking back at what happened during the day. And and that, you know, historically was how kind of newspapers ran, right? And then you have, you know, cable, you know, television, or even just network news, right? And when we think about this, this is where it gets sticky. Because I postulate that the easiest way to gain traction is to provide immediate value without having to spend a year working on something to get it to production, to even look like one tiny slice, right? Like, what's an immediate value you can provide with events? So if we look at a water boil advisory, right? One of the things you can do is, if I'm a newscaster, I can just say, hey, there's a boil water advisory in our region. I don't have to tell you even where it is, because if you know there's one, you could say, well, crap, is it my region? I'm going to go look it up.
Okay.
Yeah, so that's akin to event notification, right?
Yeah.
Where we just tell you what happened. We don't really tell you any details about it at all. We just tell you something happened. So if we say, you know, like, tonight in Denver, there's a water boil advisory, you know, for more information, call your town or whatever, right? You can get on the phone, call your town and be like, hey, am I going to get Giardia, right? Yeah. Yes, no. So it gives you the opportunity to act, right? Without necessarily telling you if it's, you know, specific to you, but it tells you enough so you can go, oh, well, crap, I better go check that out.
Right.
And that's really easy to do. Now, does that provide value over you finding out a day later or the evening after you've already drunk the water? Yes.
It right? does.
Absolutely. And it's a tiny step. And so that is event notification. It can be very valuable and you can do it very quickly. It's like a quick win, right? And if we looked at that in a real context, it would be kind of like something like every time an invoice is cut, right? Every time an order is placed, just tell me an order was placed. Maybe I go look it up, right? In my, you know, legacy database.
Right.
But now all of a sudden, instead of having to wait for some kind of flat file every night, I know every time a new order is placed, right? So it's kind of like an interim step that's really easy to do.
Okay.
So that's kind of where I suggest, you know, people start, because the next step is really quick to get to. And that's event carried state transfer, right? That would be going on the news and going, you know, in the Southwest quadrant of Denver, there is a boil water advisory. So it's not only telling you something happened, it's giving you enough information so you know what you need to act on. You know what's going on. So in that case, I don't even have to make a phone call anymore, right? I just need to go, oh, well, do I live in that quadrant? Yes or no, right?
Yeah.
So that's even more valuable and quicker. Now, let me tell you what event sourcing is.
Okay.
Event sourcing is, you know what I really need to do from day one? I need to keep the state of the water in every single quadrant and track whether or not there's a boil water advisory for every single, you know, possible quadrant and street. Every time there is a boil water advisory, I'm going to keep a history on it. I also need to make sure that at any point in time, I can go back to the exact minute and tell you, was there a boil water advisory, yes or no, for an entire city.
Okay, so the complete state of the quadrant or the city or the whatever the object is and history of that state.
Correct.
And notification of when the state changes.
Correct.
Okay.
And I can play that back at any point in time and say on that, right? Now, is that valuable for someone who's doing historical research about water quality? Sure, right? Do I need to do that first? No, you don't.
Okay.
Because it's a lot harder. So that value that you're getting, it better be worth it because it is a lot harder for people to see that as valuable than the first two. So okay. If I tell you the first two, I say, hey, look, anytime there's a boil water advisory, I'm going to tell you about it. And then you'll just say, oh, I'm going to go call this and see if I need to stop drinking versus finding out a day later and getting Giardia. You're going to be like, yeah, okay, I can see the value in that. Mm-hmm. And then if I tell you, you know what? Not only that, I'm also going to tell you whether or not it's in your neighborhood. So you don't even have to call anymore. People are like, this is great. Awesome sauce.
Yeah.
Right? But if I, from day one, I go, look, this is what we're going to do. We're going to create a project to track the state of all boil water advisories for all time historically, right? It's going to take about, you know, a year and a half maybe to, you know, and in that time, you still won't know and you'll still have Giardia the entire time, right? But it's going to be super valuable for historical researchers. Like, right. Can you see which one is a harder sell?
Yeah, the second one, who cares about the value for historical researchers, right? You're not getting immediate
value. Yeah. And I think, you know, and I think people get caught up in that. And I've seen this, like, where people are like, you know, you ever see that thing on Saturday Night Live years ago where they're like, if it's not Scottish, it's crap, right? Worst Scottish accent ever.
Mike Myers. I'm not going to try one because Scottish listeners will let me know how bad it was.
I know. They'll let me know. And I apologize in advance.
It was a Mike Myers thing. You weren't even really trying. Yeah.
I wasn't. I always put really bad accents on so no one will know if it's me.
That way you're like, I wasn't even trying to do that. Right. I was just changing my voice a little bit.
That's right. But we have a community built, you know, where a lot of people who, you know, I feel that if you're somebody who's well known and you're seen as someone who people look to advice, mm-hmm. right? You kind of have a little bit of a responsibility not to take a whole, like, if it's not event sourcing, it's crap point of view. And I just want to tell people, you know, because I feel I have that responsibility because what ends up happening is people don't even enter the event space because they're like, well, there's no way I can take 2 years. I can't do that. I don't have the organizational pull, right? And when in reality, if you start small and you show that value, you can get more people behind you. And then those use cases where event sourcing is like money for, then you've got all this, you know, you've got a lot of street cred built up.
Success and credibility, yeah.
Absolutely.
Which is always how technology adoption works. It doesn't work by creating the perfect finished thing that conforms to a platonic ideal in every way and you know, is just a shining example of perfection. You kind of usually build something that is valuable and a little bit crap and does something that like stakeholders in the business are going to recognize as good.
Right.
And that can be like, there's lots of little, what's the word? You know, minimum viable or,
minimum valuable product. I like to call it that.
Valuable is nice. Yeah.
I read that somewhere that somebody said we should move away from minimum viable and go to minimum valuable.
There you go. I'd buy that.
And I like that better.
Yeah. So, that's a good point because that's always how we drive technology change. Mm-hmm. You get a little bit of a victory and it can be imperfect. What else? I mean, if you remember off the top of your head, the other kind of sections in the course, these are really good foundational ideas, but what other things do you take people through?
So again, right. One of them is like, you know, there's a lot of words, right? In computers, there always have been. We like to make up new words for things there's already words for.
Oh, we do.
Hashtag job security, maybe? I don't know.
No, it's a linguistic thing. You know, we have to like mark ourselves as insiders, and it's specialized vocabulary is complex, but it's do it.
It's true. So there's a lot of definitions for things you might hear that, you know, you might have said, okay, well, I think I know like what CQRS is, but it'd be great to have an example in practice. And the other thing I like about it is like, you can try it all. So one of the biggest barriers that people have as well is like, you know, if they're somebody and their organization is brand new, right? They might not have a streaming library of choice, right? They might not be able to spin up, like, you know, they might have an old archaic Windows laptop that won't even run and just falls over if they try to like even, you know, and throughout the whole course, right? There's Confluent Cloud, there's credits provided. You can use KSQL DB, which is fully managed, and you can just play around with it. And that's the thing I like the most. So you can, you know, we go through an example of using CQRS, right? Where we're going to separate out, right? That state building, you know, from like where we're like serving up a view from like where we're keeping, which is great. So I like it when, you know, my applications do one thing and do it well within reason. And I love the idea of like stopping front ends from having to be so smart and just saying, I'm just going to serve you up whatever view you want because I don't care because they're easy to make. Boom, boom, boom.
I think
CQRS lends itself naturally to that because it's basically decoupling the idea of I need to like store my data the same way it's and then do this, you know, dance and magic either in the front end or I'll have another service at massage or like blah, garbage. You know, make a service, have that view be served up the way that your dashboard needs it, and then you're done, and it's easy.
All of which, and this isn't really our topic today, but just that pattern you described is kind of, you know, logs are down in the corner winking at you with that whole pattern because it makes it more sensible to keep your system of record as a log of events and then materialize whatever views are
absolutely
are necessary. So it's not required. You can do CQRS with different underlying data infrastructure, but that emerges as the sensible option.
Yeah. And we talk about that. We talk about how, like, if you have to do like a map reduce every single time something's updated from the beginning, like that's not very workable. Right.
No,
so it's like a consistent, you know, it's a consistent view that keeps up. So you're not like starting from scratch every time. Right. You know, and so we talk about that and there's some really neat things too, coming in, KSQL DB. And I hope I don't get in trouble for this. Probably not. I think we published the blog post. I know that we're allowed to give it to customers. I don't know if it's been published yet, but we just did, like they released scalable or are releasing scalable push queries, which I like to call server-side filtering for Kafka. It's really cool. And that's kind of that direction where I can actually tell KSQL DB, hey, I want this view and I want a long-lived connection that's going to give me this view and give me all the updates, right? And it's great, you know, we're learning and the new release will scale that out to like a significant number of clients that can do that at the same time. Which I think is, it fits right in with CQRS and right in with this, how do we make it easy for these people to, you know, have that consistent view and then get consistent updates, right? From a client side.
Yeah.
So I think that's going to be cool too. That's not in the course,
Said, we can say this to customers. I don't know if we'd say, I'm always in the opposite situation. You in a customer facing role, me in a community facing role. When I talk to customers, I'm like, wait, I know this, but can I say it? I don't know if I'm allowed to say this. And I'm just the worst at that. It's funny. There's like zero memory for, you know, is that account referenceable? I don't know. I'm not in sales.
Yes.
Anyway. Yes. Scalable server-side filtering for Kafka. That is.
Yeah. And I mean, I think that's one of the strengths of the course too, is because if you're just getting started with this, it can be a bit Herculean to try to set up all of your own stuff, even just to play around with it. So the course is nice that way, that it leads you through the examples and you can just, you know, use cloud and use all that stuff and get it going.
Yep. And I said this in the intro, hopefully you remember me saying it, but I'll say it in the message body as well, not just in the headers, but podcast 100, if you are signing up for Confluent Cloud and use that code and you're doing exercises in Anna's event sourcing course, you get an extra $100 of free stuff, which is nice. And since we're talking about it, I'll say you're going to use KSQL DB. Make sure you don't leave your application up and running forever, because it is more expensive to keep that running, because there's like dedicated resources associated with it. Yep. So like, chisel off some time, do your thing, shut down the application. Otherwise, your free credits will get eaten up. So, you know, be careful. Yeah. But the idea is you should be able to do all this without paying anything. We give you enough startup stuff for that.
Yeah, absolutely. And I would even go one further and say, like, if you feel like, oh, crap, if I shut this down, I'm going to lose everything, and it's not really quick to redeploy it, like, shoot us an email and tell us exactly what you're having trouble with. Because it should be easy just to tear down and then just, you know, reapply, you know, whatever queries there are in the course.
Right, right. And they're all copyable and pastable.
Yep, so. Exactly.
Nice. Well, Anna, what's next for you? You got anything else like this that you want to work on or?
Yeah. I have a research spike I'm doing, if we can call that, like, my personal research spike. Because I don't really, this is going to sound horrible, I really don't like the way that we do schemas today at all, any of them. They're necessary, but I want schemas to be more than necessary. I want them to be amazing. And right now, the way that you evolve schemas is incredibly restrictive. And it just doesn't fit. It slows people down too much for me, and it doesn't represent a beautiful, allowable contract. If you think about it, like, look at something like Kafka, like the Kafka protocol, right? Mm-hmm. I can hook up pretty much any version of client to Kafka, and Kafka will downcast up, do whatever it needs to do to talk to that client, right? Mm-hmm. When we talk about protocol, right? Yet schemas aren't that easy at all to work that way, right? Huh. They break. They just seem overly complex for something that I feel like we figured out exactly how to do in other areas. And I know, you know, like, data mesh is gaining a lot of steam and momentum. And when we look at treating data as a product, right, treating that data that you're using as a product, you've got to have compatibility. And I think that there's a better way to do that. So, and that all ties in with eventing, right? It's how do we, because you've said it best, Tim, multiple times, right? Things change, right? They do. They change on you a lot. And so you can't fight that. You have to embrace it. And I feel like the schemas we have today do not embrace that. They tolerate it.
And this is consistent with, you know, when I talk to folks who are, you know, the big enterprise deployment people who are, as it were, doing events right, kind of following after our recommendations and putting our worldview into practice and all that stuff that, like, we want to see, their questions are all about how to manage schema at that scale. So there is something here. And I'm glad that you are spiking on that, because I suspect interesting product ideas could come of such a thing.
Yeah, I'm going to think about it while I take a turkey nap, like, next week.
My guest today has been Anna McDonald.
I love Anna. Turkey naps. Sorry. Happy Turkey Day, everybody.
Happy Thanksgiving Day. Anna, thanks for being a part of Streaming Audio.
Thank you very much.
And there you have it. Thanks for listening to this episode. Now, some important details before you go. Streaming Audio is brought to you by Confluent Developer. That's developer.confluent.io, a website dedicated to helping you learn Kafka, Confluent, and everything in the broader event streaming ecosystem. We've got free video courses, a library of event-driven architecture design patterns, executable tutorials covering KSQL DB, Kafka streams, and core Kafka APIs. There's even an index of episodes of this podcast. So if you take a course on Confluent Developer, you'll have the chance to use Confluent Cloud. When you sign up, use the code PODCAST100 to get an extra $100 of free Confluent Cloud usage. Anyway, as always, I hope this podcast was helpful to you. If you want to discuss it or ask a question, you can always reach out to me at TL Berglund on Twitter. That's TLBERGLUND. Or you can leave a comment on the YouTube video if you're watching and not just listening, or reach out in our community Slack or forum. Both are linked in the show notes. And while you're at it, please subscribe to our YouTube channel and to this podcast wherever fine podcasts are sold. And if you subscribe through Apple Podcasts, be sure to leave us a review there. That helps other people discover us, which we think is a good thing. So, thanks for your support, and we'll see you next time.